Hello, everyone, and welcome to Friends of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. I'm your host, Brad.
And I'm your host, Sarah.
And this week on the show, we are talking about two, count it, two Bad Batch episodes. Yes, we are talking about both Warmantle and Return to Kamino. We took a break last week, mostly because I was traveling out of town and got back at an unreasonable time. And so we just figured, hey, let's just do a two-episode extravaganza, Sarah. How are we feeling? This is our first time doing two in one.
Well, for this show, and I have to tell you, I feel a little silly because we should have done this on Infested. And we did that. And then we did it on two really good episodes. And now we're like, uh-oh, we don't want to keep the people here for 4 hours. So we're going to have to condense a little.
Yeah. We're going to condense as much as we can to kind of hit the most important beats. But I will say it doesn't surpass that one time we did a 7-episode recap for Star Wars Resistance, because that was wild. A lot went into that episode.
7 episodes, in fact.
Yeah. I don't know how we did it, but we did it. So we're going to try 2 today. It's a little bit easier than 7, but I'm excited to get into these episodes because, yeah, they were, so far for me, probably the two highlights of the season for a variety of reasons, because we were really getting into the end game, which is kind of what I wanted from Infested after the Ryloth arc. Mm-hmm. And here we are kind of at the almost like a 3-part finale. It's really a part 1 and a part 2, but it feels like a almost trilogy of episodes to close this out. So before we get into the Bad Batch, however, I do want to acknowledge the loss of somebody so important to the Star Wars community. So earlier this week, we learned that the legendary author J.W. Rinzler passed away. So he passed away on July 28th at the age of 58 from pancreatic cancer. So, you know, this is a really heartbreaking loss for the Star Wars community. If you don't know J.W. Rinzler, he wrote many of the behind-the-scenes books, you know, making of Revenge of the Sith and making of Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. He still has one book left coming out next month. So he's definitely somebody that we've used a lot of research from on the podcast here, and somebody who's had some really great, intelligent, fun conversations with many fans and other podcasters in the community. And he's just like a really bright presence, and he means a lot to a lot of different people. He's the reason some people even get into Star Wars and, you know, doing Star Wars podcasts or blogs and whatnot. So, you know, he's partly the reason why I continue to fall in love with behind the scenes stuff. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. And it was a huge loss. So, you know, just sending our thoughts to his family.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that I'm sending my love to his family, his friends, his, you know, former coworkers and people who got to know him, and to the community as a whole. This is definitely a large loss for those of us who really dive into everything we can get our hands on behind the scenes. And he's been a great person to bring that all to light for the public. So very grateful for his contributions. And cancer sucks, and it's a terrible disease. And I just hope that he and his family are at peace. And I'm, again, sending my sincerest condolences to his family and friends.
Yeah, cancer is something that I think affects everybody, whether it's a close friend or a family member. I myself have dealt with family members having cancer in the past as well, so I understand the heartbreak that comes with it. There was a fundraiser that has closed its donations at this point, but it raised $55,000 for JW's medical expenses. It was started by his daughter, Sarah. They capped the donations, and anything after their initial goal was going to be donated to the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. So we'll include the link to where you can donate to that cancer network in the description of this episode. So since you can no longer donate to the GoFundMe, if you want to throw a donation towards that network, you can do so. So it's a great cause. Moving forward, you know, we'll always remember the legacy and the life of J.W. Rinzler. So it's definitely a huge loss for the Star Wars community, but we will definitely miss him.
Mm-hmm. There's no real good way to move kind of on from that conversation into a different conversation with a completely different tone, or to transition into the Bad Batch, but that's our job here on this podcast covering the Bad Batch. So we are actually moving into a little bit of news that's on the happier end. And that is that the Bad Batch will be returning for a second season. Cue ooh, the ooh. Yay!
So yeah, second season, Sarah. We're pretty excited about that. We were kind of feeling that the show was heading in that direction, but how do you mm-hmm. feel about a second season and what it could mean for this cast of characters?
Well, there was no way they were only going to give us one season of an animated show. There's no way that they would sink their teeth and like their money into only one season. Unless they were explicitly coming to a closing arc for all these characters, but it's clear throughout the season that they have not been. So I am looking forward to more adventures. I hope that season two improves upon season one and really allows us to dive more into the characters and their connections and give us some variety in the kinds of things we're learning about them. And I'm also still, maybe I'm just a fool, but like I'm still hoping for my people to show up. And they being Bail Organa, Captain Panaka, and either, I will accept either for this third position, Garrick Versio or Captain Doza.
Yeah, those would be some great appearances. And I think the show hasn't shied away from painting out the larger scope of the galaxy with characters that we know and new locations and also the political drama and intrigue of what's happening in this era. If we're led to believe that the Bad Batch is going to move on from the whole Crosshair thing, if he joins them or if he bites the dust in episode 16 this week, you know, to be determined, but I'm assuming they're going to sort of turn their focus towards helping a larger cause in season two.
I would hope so.
Much to like what Rex is trying to do with the early formation of the rebellion. So I think that'll be the direction the show heads in. And I'm excited to see if we get a big panel at Celebration. That would be really exciting if we can get, you know, Dee Bradley up there, Michelle Ong, Jennifer Corbett, Brad Rao, like just get like a really awesome Bad Batch panel together, because that would be really exciting to see all of them on stage. I'd be a huge fan. So
yeah, especially since this is a show that really premiered during Le Panoramic.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we haven't really gotten to get that exciting press coverage with multiple members of the cast or the creative process necessarily. So we've gotten some text interviews and some, you know, roundtable sort of stuff, but I want more. And the mm-hmm. convention panel is a part of that more.
Yeah,
for sure.
And last thing here, speaking of press interviews, I actually just posted an interview with Gwendolyn Yeo, who plays Nala Se on The Bad Batch. So if you haven't already checked that out on our podcast feed, definitely go do so, because it's a fun short interview. It's about 15 minutes. But definitely check that out. So
yeah.
With that being said, Sarah, I think we should just jump into these episodes. So we're going to start with Warmantle. I know it's not the most exciting one to talk about as of current time, because people are kind of foaming at the mouth over Return to Kamino, but don't worry. We'll get there. And I'll put timestamps in the episode description. So if you just want to jump right to Return to Kamino and know what's happening there, you can do so. All right, Sarah. So Warmantle premiered last week. It was directed by Stuart Lee and written by Damani Johnson. This episode, holy crap. You know, we were kind of down after Infested because it wasn't necessarily our favorite episode of the season. It was kind of a
definitely not
of a slower, less mm-hmm. tense, less high stakes episode. And that was not necessarily what we wanted after the Ryloth arc. And then boom. Warmantle comes in ready to throw the punches at me, and I'm just like, ouch, how dare you, number one. And number two, holy crap, we're seeing the early formation of the Empire. This was nuts. So what did you think of Warmantle?
So I really enjoyed this episode. There were some standout moments for me, and just like standout moments, including the setting. And when we get the setting on Darrow and we kind of pan down into the very Utapauan cave, more it's not a cave, but it's a hole in the earth essentially that goes down, and it's in a circle. Utapau, same vibes but Imperial. Loved that it was in the mountains. I thought that the opening was so thrilling with the chase.
Oh yeah.
And how he's being hunted. And I think there are also great moments from both Echo and Omega in this episode. Mm-hmm. So overall, really solid stuff.
Yeah.
really enjoyable.
We've been waiting for the Echo focus like all season because he hasn't really been in the limelight all too much, but War Mantle was definitely his episode because there's a couple of comments and conversations that he has throughout. The one that stood out to me was when they initially go to find Gregor after being told by Rex that he needs help. And Hunter's just like, there's too many troopers here. We can't do it. We have to leave. We're outnumbered. And Echo's like, listen, if you had thought the same thing when you rescued me on Skako Minor, I would still be locked up with the Techno Union, like as their slave, basically. So if there's a chance there's somebody in there that needs our help that's being held against his will, we need to go in there and get him out. And I thought that was a really awesome moment to actually call back to Echo's past and bring it all to the forefront that, like, you know, really makes the decision for the group to say, we got to do this. And the fact that Gregor, you know, is another clone that we know from the Clone Wars, we know from Rebels, but in the Clone Wars arc, the last time we've seen him was blowing up with a shuttle, you know, kind of going out in a explosive glory, facing down some droids. And Echo is also another character that goes out in an explosion until he later pops back up to be alive. So I thought it was kind of funny when Gregor said, you know, I got blown up once and survived. And I just thought the same thing with Echo. I'm like, yeah, him too. You guys might have a few things in common. So I thought it was great. Shortly after that, they're having a conversation together about, like, hey, how did you end up here? And I thought that was really awesome. That was what I wanted.
Yeah. My question for you is, did you know that it was Gregor from the time they said CC5576? Because I didn't.
Yeah, I did not. I don't know the clone numbers too well, except for like CT555, because that's easy to remember, you know, but him, I didn't know. Although when I started hearing him talk and he kind of has that sort of
distinct voice.
Right. And I was like, oh my God, that's Gregor. Cause now we're going to see the iteration of him that makes it into Rebels. Cause Rebels, he's just wild. He is all over the place, you know, very different from the Gregor we see in the Clone Wars, who is a stray Republic commando soldier. So yeah, I was very, very excited. And we called this, or at least I called it early on, because I tweeted about it on May 8th that said, how cool would it be if Gregor showed up in the Bad Batch? I was like, I called it. So that was really exciting for me. I was like, vindication.
They saw your tweet and they immediately hopped back into the animation studios and were like, we need to fix this episode to add Gregor. This is what the episode needs because Brad said so. So
yeah,
know that you are just making waves in the animation world. You know?
Absolutely.
You should ask them for Bale and Panaka and Versio and or Doza.
Oh my gosh. I should tweet more often.
I'm kidding, but I'm also not, you know.
Yeah, I tweet out like, how cool would it be to see Niku, Yeager, Doza, all of these guys, Kylo Ren, and the Bat Batch. And then everyone's like, shit, he just unloaded a lot of characters. We got to fit in there. Somebody call Adam Driver.
And quite literally none of them are alive. So except maybe Yeager.
Yeah.
But like Niku's not.
Yeah, yeah. But what did you think of introducing yet another character that we know, like another sort of cameo, especially one that's connected to Rebels? Because we keep talking about how the show is a little bit of a Rebels prequel. Do you like that, especially how Gregor kind of fits into the larger scheme of things?
I don't know Gregor too well. I haven't seen his Clone Wars arc, and I only have watched Rebels the once through. So I know where we meet him. I kind of know the context and the setting and all that good stuff, but I don't have such a connection to him at all. So, I mean, I felt this was successful and interesting because it didn't strike me as we're just putting this one here for the fans kind of a thing. Is going to directly relate to the future of the character and the future of the story, alongside kind of Rex showing up, because again, he's connected to Rex. In this episode, Echo says Rex wouldn't ask us for help if it wasn't urgent. So there's a connection that keeps happening with Rex that I think is really valuable, and I think is what's ultimately where they're going to go, I hope. So I find that this could continue to be played out. Whereas I don't necessarily see, while I think the Ryloth arc was really interesting to see and exciting for fans and like interesting for Omega to have a contemporary in Hera at this point, I don't necessarily think Hera will show up again, but like I think Gregor will show up again and I think Rex will show up again. And I think this is where we're headed. That's kind of what I'm getting at. And that's not to say that the Hera placement is bad, because I don't think it is, but that's what I'm trying to go for.
Yeah, and I think the big question of the series is what do the clones become when they no longer have a war to fight? And we see that with Rex, we see that with the Bad Batch, and the Bad Batch have always kind of been those clones that are on the outskirts. You know, they're called the Bad Batch. They're the most successful elite clones there are because they were genetically modified. So it's like, what are we? And I think the idea of maybe helping Rex in the future find more clones, like Wolf is the other clone that's part of Rebels that we haven't seen yet. So I'd imagine we'll come into contact with him at some point. It'll be kind of cool to see if the show just becomes a hunt for the clones that are still out there that want to fight the good fight, like Hauser. Maybe we go rescue Hauser in season two, right? And he joins the Bad Batch's crew.
Hauser,
that would be so cool if they did a Hauser rescue
mission.
More hot
Hauser for the people.
Yeah. So I really like that because you can fit in the galactic politics and what's happening there within that clone-centric story, but still make it really heartfelt and make their mission have a lot of meaning, especially because the clones are people who have had their free will stripped away. So it's like, what if we can give that free will back to them? And I think that's what Rex wants to do, you know? And I love the line from Echo that says, you know, Rex trusts this clone and I trust Rex. So that's why we're going to go after this guy. Yeah. And that just goes to show, you know, loyalty again is everything to the clones, as Anakin says in Clone Wars. It means everything. Now, speaking of the question of like, what do the clones become in the aftermath of the Clone Wars? We're seeing that with War Mantle. Like, let's talk about what War Mantle is. That's the title of the episode. We have finally seen the first formation of TK troopers, which is awesome. And they're all based on the old Ralph McQuarrie artwork, like the original stormtrooper look. And it makes sense, right? Because the stormtroopers that we see in the original trilogy are not going to be, you know, right out of the box to start the Empire, right? There's probably going to be many iterations of them in the next, you know, 20 years. But I was so excited when I saw those troopers lined up and you kind of hear the musical cues from A New Hope that indicate this is the Empire, right? This is the music that you hear on the Death Star. It's almost like beat for beat, right? And that was really exciting as a Star Wars fan to just be like, ah, yes, this is the good stuff. This is Star Wars. This is like, you know, just sneaking around, trying to avoid stormtroopers. And I just love that spy mission vibe. It really did feel like A New Hope in so many ways. And also seeing the return of Republic Commandos and like what they've become.
Yeah.
In the early days of the Empire. So that was really, really cool. What did you think of the design of the stormtroopers and seeing the true replacements of the clones, as Gregor put it?
I thought it was really interesting to kind of see how they were described, because we kind of get the idea that there are, is it 10,000 or 1,000 TK troopers?
Yeah.
And like 50 clone commandos. And then at one point, Gregor says, well, there's an endless supply of new TK troopers and they come from all over the galaxy and they swear loyalty to the Empire. And I just thought that was really interesting because it also begged the question of like how much time has passed since the start of the show and Order 66. And we don't really quite know that. So I think that's really interesting because we know that like the Batch has gone on other missions with Sid during this time that aren't included in the episodes. So it's all very interesting. And the TK troopers design and their presence, I think, is ominous. And we'll get into it. But watching this episode back, there's a moment when Lama Su is kind of looking. He's in the hangar and he just kind of like looks out as Rampart and one of the Crosshairs group of troopers says something. And he kind of just looks out to all the troopers leaving. It's kind of very sad. And then it becomes very ominous as like, I was like, oh,
where are they going?
This is a direct foreshadowing of, you know, what comes next. Not okay. But you know, I think that there are a lot of interesting moving pieces happening in this episode, which are very fascinating to think about.
Right, because you have the young clones who are talking to Nala Say, and they're like, hey, we're still going to be soldiers, right? And I'm just like, are they sending them somewhere to be like killed and slaughtered? Because I'm just like, I don't know what's going to happen with these old clones, but to me, it feels like anybody that doesn't have that black armor that Crosshair is wearing, which are kind of like the new group of clone troopers, the only ones that still have that phase three armor left. Anybody else outside of that's a goner. They're taking them to a farm up north.
The poor baby men. They are baby men, and I feel bad for them because they're like, Nalase, are you coming with? And she's like, oh, I gotta get some more things, and then I'll be with you guys. And I was like, poof. That's not happening.
Woof.
Yikadoodles. Like, sads. Big sads. But, you know, like, that's the only home they've ever known. And they're also 10 days old. I'm kidding about that. But probably. More or less. So it's all sad to think about how they were created with this single purpose. This purpose doesn't exist anymore. So they see them as expendable and not as, you know, people with lives. So, sucks. It sucks. And it sucks to think about the place and the setting and the people and the whole thing, even though you don't want them to be fighting a war.
Right.
Either.
So. Also, rest in peace, Lamassu. That was a twist in the episode. R.I.P. You know,
I mean, we assume. We don't know until there's a body.
True. And,
but even then, we don't know because, you know, Darth Maul, he had half a body and he decided he was going to keep living. So, you know, we have no idea. And we did not hear a gunshot. So...
Season two.
Could Lamassu still be alive? Maybe.
Somehow, Lamassu has returned.
Exactly, exactly. So with that, I think we should hop into like very rapid fire odds and ends for this episode because I have a couple of moments that I would just like to highlight.
Yes.
Do you have any moments that you want to start out with?
Yeah, let me start off with the Republic Commandos once again. So we do see the return of Scorch, which was really exciting. He was the clone that had the yellow armor. His number is RC1262. He is the clone commando from the actual Republic Commando video game, and we saw him in one episode of, or actually two episodes of the Clone Wars, Monster and Witches of the Mist, I believe. So it was really cool to see a little cameo there. That's a
good episode name.
Yeah. So it was really cool to see that. You know, I imagine the rest of that Republic Commando Delta Squad is there. So, that was just an awesome appearance. I was really excited about that. I was like, oh my God, yes. So, good stuff. Right. Good stuff.
My odd and end is that there was a great moment between Omega, Wrecker, who are playing a game on top of Gonki in the ship. And I was like, this is precious. This is so good. And Omega's like, make a move. And Wrecker's like, I'm thinking. and then later, I will say, connected to this. I'm just gonna do all three Gonki points right in the same row. The next Gonki point is at the end of the episode when Omega's like, Gonki, we need your help, and then she plugs Gonki in, and I was like, oh, this is great. I love this. This is so precious. She worked on Gonki and now he can work. But my third one is right at the beginning. I did not notice this the first watch through, but Hunter is flipping his knife and twisting it and flipping it, and Omega is repairing Gonki, and then with her like wrench she also tries doing a couple of flips, and I was like,
yeah,
stop, this is too much.
I picked it up on my second watch too. I was like, oh my God, she loves him so much. My heart. Oh, that was a great moment. Yeah, my only other odd and end, I guess, is just the end of the episode. I mean, my God, what a thrilling heart racing end. Like, I was just at the edge of my seat. I was watching this on the plane, actually. So I was like,
you were trying watching this on the plane?
Yeah, I downloaded it on my phone. I watched it on my phone because my iPad like would not play it for some reason. But I was like trying not to cry. I had nobody next to me, thankfully. But I was just like, oh my God, this is so good. Like, the music is so good. Wrecker's on the gun. Omega's flying the ship. They're having the dramatic moment where they gotta jump onto the ship's ramp, and Wrecker's shooting out of the ship into the hallway, and they're trying to all escape, and now the V-Wings are there and they're shooting everybody, and now they have the TIE fighter sound. It's crazy. What's going on? The whole soundscape of this final firefight was just like pure insanity to me. But when Hunter fell off that cliff, I was like, oh my freaking God. Like, one, how is he not dead?
Yeah.
But also that final shot where all of those TK troopers and the commandos are like basically aiming at him, saying like, you're a prisoner now. And then just to get that final moment with him and Crosshair saying, I figured you would show up. And he's like, I wanted the rest of the Bad Batch. And what a cliff, what a freaking cliffhanger. I was completely awed. My adrenaline was pumping so much. Oh,
yeah.
How did you feel about the ending?
I thought it was pretty incredible. One, how did he not die? How is he not dead? Two, ouch. Three, the pain in Omega's voice was heartbreaking. And then the very end of that, where, you know, Hunter has lost essentially in that moment, I'm just like, oh,
yeah,
uh-oh, not good, you know.
There were some beautiful shots as well. Like the animation just looks so good, especially in the more forested area. It's just beautiful, honestly. Like the shot of him actually getting up, and you see in the background the troopers coming towards him. It looks straight out of a movie or like a video game using Unreal Engine. I was just like, this is insane to me that this is animated. So it just keeps getting better and better. I love the animation on the show so much. Well, with that being said, let's jump into the latest episode, which is Return to Kamino. This was directed by Nathaniel Villanueva and written by Matt Mignovetz. So notably, Matt Mignovetz is also the story editor. He's also the one who wrote Jedi Fallen Order. So I knew this episode was going to hurt me, and it did. It hurt me a lot, Sarah, because, you know, a couple episodes ago, I was like, oh, we lost Tanwi. Oh, now we lost Lama Su. Now we lost all of freaking Tipoca City. What is going on? We're losing all the Kaminoans. Kaminoans, I guess you could call it. I don't know. How do you pronounce it? Kaminoans? Kaminoans? This is hotly debated.
I used to pronounce it Kaminoans, but then I listened to the show and heard them saying it for the first time, and they say Kaminoans.
Yeah, I like Kaminoans a lot more. Yeah.
It's different than I thought it was. I still like Kaminoans, but I say Kaminoans now because I don't want our listeners to think that I'm not a real Star Wars fan.
I just want to say with this episode, there are so many great elements to it. Mm-hmm. Crosshair's story surprised me. It was like complete whiplash. I did not expect these type of character moments with Crosshair. The conversations, the moment when he shoots the little mirror thing, when I saw it on there, I was like, oh shit, he's going to do the thing. And he did it. And all those troopers died. And I was like, oh my God, it's just Hunter and Crosshair and the Bad Batch together again. And oh, it was so good. But also just the fact that we see the destruction of Tipoca City. For me, it felt like Star Wars' version of Closing Time. You know, it was like Closing Time. Just like, this is it. You know, the Clone Wars ended with Order 66, but also this kind of feels like a second ending to the Clone Wars, because this is the literal birthplace of the Clone Wars. This is where the clones were created. This is where we've had so many memories with the clones. This is where they trained, they were bred, they became friends, they went to the lunchroom together, and that's kind of all encapsulated in that final moment where the Kynan brothers, my God, how dare they? You know, they're playing
they came
that
for the heart.
they're playing that soft music over the multiple shots of different areas of the base, and you're just like, oh God, this is where it's happening. To me, it felt like a goodbye letter to the prequel trilogy in a lot of ways. It really felt like we are now turning a page to say, this is done. The prequels are over. This is kind of the symbol of the prequel trilogy in many ways. This place.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. And I wrote a note in my notes that said, oh no, we're getting the brassy sads, is what I called them. It was like, because it's allowed to like wallow a little bit in the sound. It's a sound that's allowed to sit and wallow a little bit, and it's like, oh, the way that music evokes emotion, and I don't know how to ever describe it, but it certainly does. And this was one of those moments where I was like, no, don't do this to me. Matt Nictibetz, he knew exactly what I didn't want him to do, and he did it anyway.
Yeah.
He's like, I will personally hurt Sarah today. and he did. He really succeeded at that, because the montage of everything just like empty, alone, sitting there, is devastating.
It is.
But on top of that, we have some excellent moments from Crosshair. And I mean, my one complaint is that we haven't been getting these excellent moments from Crosshair throughout the season to really make us feel this strong bond and this strong connection between the conflict. Rather, the conflict between Crosshair and the Bad Batch. So this episode had to do a lot of work to catch us totally up in that time. And I think it did a really good job. I just wish we got even more of it. And it starts right out the beginning. I don't know if you noticed this, but Crosshair was saying, like, your team will come, your crew will come. And he's not saying, he feels disconnected from it. He feels like he is not a part of that. He's the opposite of that by specifically designating it as hunters. And I was like, oh. I also thought it was interesting right at the beginning that we know that Gregor is with Cid. So they're still aligned with or communicating with Cid in some way, and felt that that was a reasonable place to put Gregor.
She wasn't very happy about that. Another stray clone.
Yeah, of course.
She's like, enough of these people.
And he's probably like, you know, being weird. And she's like, I guess I'll keep you around. Like, you're not boring, at least.
He's a little loopy from the explosion still that he survived.
Yeah. But I don't know if you have any thoughts before just kind of wanting to dive into the storyline, what's happening with Crosshair here and how this episode plays out.
Yeah, I just want to shout out once again the Kiner brothers, Kevin Kiner. My God, I mean, the music is such a character in this show, the synth that they're using and that they've been using since season 7 of the Clone Wars, that I think that was one of the reasons the Siege of Mandalore hit so hard was because of the music. And we're seeing the same thing now with the final three episodes of this season. And my God, just hearing the Camino motif when it kind of transitions to their ship flying towards Camino, and you hear the da-na-na-na-na. I was just like, oh, I feel like I'm in 2002, baby. Oh my God, like that, hearing that alone was worth 15 episodes. I was like, yeah, that's the stuff. It made me want to go play Battlefront 2 on Camino and play
which
there.
Which we should still, we'll still do.
We're still going to do that.
Clear here.
Yeah.
But no, I totally agree with you. I think that was definitely worth the wait for, and also just a brilliant way to include that music and make it feel real and make it feel high stakes by including just a bit of the established music. Because what it also does in this episode is brings back the Bad Batch theme when they're all together. And so I thought that was another great way to incorporate music we already knew into this episode to help tell the emotional story. And I will go back to the end of the last episode and say that there was a great emotional moment at the end with Crosshair and his kind of sound, which is very synthy, very tech, technologically sounding. It's all made with the computer. And so to get that into soundscape alongside this soundscape in this episode, I think it was really successful. And it's like the ante has been ramped up. And I'm definitely feeling that in the music and in the setting. And ouch, Camino.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Ouch, comma, Camino, period.
Thank you for mentioning the Bad Batch theme. I cried. Because we haven't heard that, you know, going back to the first episode, Sarah, that was like 4 months ago, by the way. The first episode of the series, when Tarkin is there and he kind of ups the ante and has them all training together in that same arena, and then just see them again and to finally hear that Bad Batch theme. Like, yes, they are together again. They were never truly apart. And that's something that Hunter tries to emphasize to him, that like, we were never enemies, even though you feel like we forgot about you, like we didn't. And I wish that had kind of come through more in the show to show that they hadn't forgotten him, because like that was one of my criticisms of the series, is that there were a lot of moments where it just felt like they forgot about Crosshair. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad Crosshair was the one to say it, because I was like, yeah, I feel the same way, Crosshair, they kind of forgot about you.
He's so, like, you haven't called, you haven't texted, you haven't showed up at my doorstep with a cookie. Like, come on guys, you're playing the bad friend game right now. Yeah. And you're winning.
Yeah. You know, I want to say too, this episode really felt like Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi-y to me. The Empire Strikes Back, kind of sneaking around the empty halls of Kamino, felt like Luke sneaking around the empty halls of Bespin. Like, they know they're going into a trap, right?
Yeah.
And there's even the one shot of the TK troopers kind of pushing along a crate. And to me, that felt like the stormtroopers pushing along Han Solo's carbonite slab. So there were some visual elements that kind of evoke that Cloud City moment, or that's the whole sequence. And also with Return of the Jedi, with Hunter as Crosshair's captive walking around the halls, Hunter trying to reach out to him and say, this isn't you, you're better than this, right? It kind of felt like Luke on Endor when he's Vader's prisoner and he's like, you know, I knew my father once, he was Anakin Skywalker. And Vader's like, that name no longer has any meaning to me, right? And so you see the tension there of one reaching out to the other and the other not really reciprocating
Yeah.
And that creates a lot of tension throughout the episode of like, Hunter continues to keep reaching out to him. He never stops. He's relentless in it almost. And that just goes to show how he doesn't view Crosshair as an enemy, right? He views him as a friend still, as a brother, and he's going to do whatever it takes to bring him back into the group.
Yeah. And I think Crosshair some kind of feels the same way a little bit in this episode. It's the very star-crossed nature of it, where it's like, we have the same thought here. We want to be together. We want to have this, mm-hmm. this team unified. But Crosshair is like, I want it for the Empire so that we can have purpose again. And Hunter is like, there is something more than this. We are expendable for them. We need to be living our own lives and for ourselves. And so they can't really agree on the way to go, but they both want the same thing in the fact that they could be all together in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to turn it to the beginning of this episode, when they are just getting to Kamino and they're going through the tunnel. First of all, the platform, the tunnel, very cool.
So cool.
Very cool. The tube. I was like, this is awesome.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But so cool. You can kind of feel the somberness in Omega as she is leading them there, as she is, you know, putting them in this place. And she's like, this is Nala Se's personal research lab. This is where I was created. This is where you were created. Clone Force, Experimental Clone Force 99. And then she says one thing that I only caught on the second watch. And she goes, I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I forget about that part sometimes because she's aging regularly. She is as old as she looks while the clones are not, and the, you know, Bad Batch is not, rather. And I was like, this is kind of heartbreaking because that's the home that she knows, and she clearly knows it quite intimately, you know. She has kind of a moment there. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that particular line, I was there, or anything else that's kind of said in that space and kind of the tone of that.
I think this episode really allowed Omega to shine in many ways, but I read that initially, the somberness, like you mentioned, as her not wanting to return to this place, because yeah. I think as much as it is her home, there's probably a lot of negative emotions that it evokes, sort mm-hmm. of trauma of seeing, you know, things that were bred in this lab. Like, what has she seen, right? And especially thinking yeah. back to Bounty Lost, when she goes to the abandoned Kamino facility, seeing what was being created there, right? So for her, she kind of is piecing it all together to say, like, that lab is no different than the one that I grew up in, or that I watched the Bad Batch grow up in, right? Like, I could have just been the next failed experiment. So for her, I think it's bringing back a lot of trauma, and she doesn't necessarily want to go back to this place. But the fact that she knows how to get around is a really big asset to the group. And she almost takes charge yeah. because she's the one leading them. She's the one that knows how to get in there. She's the one that stays beneath with AZ, which, by the way, your boy AZ's back.
My boy. When I saw AZ back,
oh my gosh.
The way that I was like, no, it can't be. But then I was like, I quite literally just bought an AZ3 sticker from Stars Align Co-op, like, not a week ago. And so I was like, my sticker. This was great timing. Like, I was like, I was so thrilled. Brilliant. But I do want to hop back to Omega for 1 second before I forget this thought. And like, I do think it's traumatic for her. I do think it's tough for her. But there's also something about walking into your childhood home as it's being sold.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing left in it anymore.
Right.
And so there's the nostalgia of the being there, knowing that is the last time that you are going to be in that place like that. And so I think Omega is experiencing a little bit of that too.
Mm-hmm. Not even just being there for the final time, watching it get demolished by the Empire.
Yes,
too,
yes, but also just like the idea that this is a place that was once so bustling
mm-hmm.
and it's just empty now. And there's a particular sadness about that. And there's a particular sadness about that, I think, that I have felt through like COVID times, going to places where I would have community with others and there just being nobody there because they are not able to happen. It's that sort of like nostalgia, that sort of pain of knowing what that place looks like when it is running as it should be or running as it once did. Mm-hmm. And the knowledge that it will never be the same again can either be, you know, hopeful or very saddening.
Yeah,
in some ways. So I think it's a really complex set of emotions for Omega. And I think that I like that we're getting this complexity with her, because we got it in the last episode too, with the pain in her voice, her taking charge with Gonki and kind of solving that problem, and then taking the lead here. So we're really getting to see her have a couple of really good moments, and we get one at the end of this episode too. So yeah, good Omega stuff. More Omega, right. Please.
And also the uncertainty of what's happening with Hunter. Is he still alive? Right. That's probably on her mind as well, because Hunter told her we'll never go back to that place. And here she is going back to that place to save him. And she tells him, I know you would have done the same for me. So that too shows a little bit of bravery on her part to go back to this place that she never wants to return to it in some ways. Right. Adding into the emotion that you mentioned, I think that's a great perspective of, being in your home before you leave it forever. I moved a lot growing up, so I experienced that several different times, and that is definitely a huge emotion. And thinking back to that, you know, bustling lunchroom in the first episode where they're having the food fight, and here we get the shot of an empty lunchroom, and you're just thinking about all the memories that were shared in there. And as a prequel lover, there is something so tragically poetic about just this place being destroyed. Like I said, it is a symbol of the prequel trilogy. Attack of the Clones is awesome. Everybody who says otherwise, hater, go away. Go away. But I mean, for you as somebody, I know you love Kamino so much. Like, it's your favorite place. So when I saw it before
Kamino, I was like, Kashyyyk are it for me.
I was like, oh God, Sarah's going to have a rough time with this episode. But like, how did you feel when you kind of know what's about to happen? You know, that last trooper leaves, you see just the three cruisers there, and Rampart kind of has that one shot where he walks towards the camera. It's a beautiful shot. You know, it's so foreboding. And Tarkin gives the final order, you may fire when ready, which every time he says that, nothing good ever happens. So how did you feel knowing one of the places that you love out of the prequel trilogy is now going to be destroyed forever? The final remnants, you know, this place that could never be found and now literally will never be found again. All the evidence is being destroyed.
Ouch, Brad, right? Don't hurt me again. Well, let me describe for the listeners the selfie that I sent you that when this occurred. So it is me in the bottom half of the frame, laying in bed. So like my head is resting up against some pillows, saluting with a sad face on. I was like, oh, RIP, the love of my life, Kamino. There's nothing that beats the rain. There's nothing that beats that sweeping music. There's nothing that beats the like the white, bright, very sterile feeling interior of that place. I don't know. There's something
about the sound effect when the doors open.
It just, oh my God. Yes. Okay. Yes.
You know?
The lanky Kiminoans, like
the swivel chairs.
Yes, there's something about the vibe, okay?
The birth pods, the little pods. Where are the children? Where are the babies? What did they do with the babies? That's so terrifying to think about.
Anyway, this was a very sad occasion for me, and I don't accept it. It is not in my canon. We get the nice montage, and then it's over for me, and then the episode ends.
I've
seen it twice, and it's just devastating. It hurts.
Do you feel it is any sort of true end or goodbye to the prequel trilogy to say, hey, we are turning this new page, we're entering a new era of the, you know, the prequel trilogy, like more of the age of the rebellion versus the age of the prequels? We're now moving into that.
I definitely think that is in play here. It's not something I thought about until you brought it up, which I thought was a thoughtful comment, and you're definitely right about it, because Kamino, I think one of the problems with this show, and I don't mean this in like a super negative way, but like just one of the things that's failed to click with me, is like the Colossus is much setting as it is a character for the show. It has its own vibe, if you will. The ship where the Bad Batch lives and travels does not have a vibe. It has Gonki, and Gonki rocks, but Gonki himself is not a setting, character, sustaining vibe. And so Kamina was the closest thing for me that they had to that, if that makes sense. And so the destruction of Kamina means that they need to find that new home, need to find a vibe officially. So I don't know if that's going to come in the form of continuing to work with Cid or working with Rex or really making their ship feel like home and making that as much of a setting as it is a character. But yeah. So I think we are definitely in that transition phase. It'll be interesting to see if the, I don't want to say iconography, but like if the keystones of the era start to become more clear, if that makes sense. If we start to get more of that classic look, classic feel, and are into that politically, it'll be really interesting to see how that continues to develop and where they go from here.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the destruction of Kamina is going to be what makes Crosshair rethink his allegiance to the Empire when he wakes up and he's like, oh, they just left me for dead, they didn't care, I'm gonna rethink this a little bit. Also, is AZ sticking with them too?
Okay, so like I had this moment when I texted you and I was like, is AC3 gonna be the new team droid, or is he gonna die in a blaze of glory? And you're like, I think he's gonna die. And I was like, he better freaking not. Like, I would be so sad. I love AC3. So I hope AZ3 is new team droid. But also about Crosshair, I don't know. And I want to bring this back to what he says when Hunter is like, this isn't you, we have to get rid of your inhibitor chip. And he's like, oh, Hunter, you silly, silly boy, I got rid of my inhibitor chip a long time ago.
Mm.
And Hunter is like, when? And I was like, I rose at the top of my forehead. Oh no. What if Hunter had already taken his chip out by the time that Omega was having those sort of conversations with him in episodes 1 and 2? What if he was already there? What if this is the path he has chosen all along? Which, I mean, serious possibility, of course. So I don't know if this is going to actually change anything for him. I don't know how he's going to feel when he wakes up, because they're all together on a ship, assumingly. I don't know. This cliffhanger really killed me. It was a good one.
Yeah. I mean, they've been teasing a really emotional ending to the season, and Crosshair is going to have to make a choice. And he mentions that at one point about how he says to Hunter offhandedly, they don't leave their own behind most of the time. And Hunter says, you tried to kill us, we didn't have a choice. And Crosshair says, and I did. Right. So that just goes to show that he is in control of his own actions. And he's owning up to them, right? He's not blaming it on the chip. He's not blaming it on pre-programming. It's his choices and he has to live with them. So it'll be interesting to see now that he has that free will, and he's had it all along, allegedly, which I think he probably did to some extent. I wonder if that chip came out after he got burned, because there's that one moment where Hunter kind of inspects the side of his head. And I think it's him thinking, oh, maybe this is, you know, the chip when it came out. I'm excited to see what that looks like and how they get back to their ship. Also, are they going to ride AZ3 back across the ocean? Because I don't know if AZ can fit like 6 members of the Bad Batch on him. Although maybe he can.
One at a time.
Yeah. It's going to be a long trip.
Yeah.
A lot of mileage.
I kind of want to take it back. We're jumping around kind of in Crosshair's story, and I think that's fine here. But I really want to highlight like his big paragraph of dialogue that I think is just mind-bendingly good, like so awesome and so interesting. And Hunter says, like, we're loyal to each other. And he goes, you weren't loyal to me. I was one of you. You have forgotten, but I haven't. And that's why I'm going to give you what you never gave me, a chance. And I was just like, oh, this is the stuff. This is the stuff. Like, this, I love the dialogue heavy episode, as even though we get a ton of action as well. Like, I think it has a good balance. But also, this is some good Star Wars conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's talking about morals, and it's talking about people, and it's talking about those we save, those we leave behind. and what we do for those around us. And it's interesting because I don't think that anything that Crosshair is saying here is a lie to Crosshair, right? I was talking about the star-crossed nature of it earlier. I feel that. And that's why I trust Crosshair when he says that his chip is gone. At the same time, this is the guy who 3 episodes ago, who explicitly asked Rampart for permission to hunt down the Bad Batch. And so I'm just wondering what it's like to be in Crosshair's head, I guess. Like, I'm wondering how he justifies all of this in his brain, and I'm wondering how he puts all the pieces together. Because the Bad Batch may have forgotten Crosshair, or they may have said he's made his choice, and we've already tried to reach out to him, and he didn't want that. And so we have to let him live with that. But the fact that he feels that he hasn't forgotten about them, why? I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I just feel like it's a very interesting version of, like, his version of the truth.
Well, I think it's because he sees them as, again, these extraordinary, powerful clone troopers who are the ideal form, right? And he's like, oh, we could do so much. It's Darth Vader reaching out to Luke, where he says, you know, join me and together we can rule the galaxy as father and son, right? It's Crosshair saying, you know, join me. I'll kill every trooper in this room right now, so it's just us, and I'll give you that choice, which is what he does. He says, join me and we'll join the Empire together. We're bred for larger things than what was given to us. This is not our purpose. What you know, your purpose isn't to be something you're not. It's not to be a dad taking around a kid, being a fugitive on the run, putting her in danger. Let her go. Mm-hmm. I'm your purpose. Together, brotherhood, right? Isn't that what this is all about? Yeah. And Hunter's like, you don't even know us. You know, yeah. Like, you haven't been there. You haven't seen what we've been through with Omega. And there's truth to that. But mm-hmm. I just love when Crosshair says, don't become my enemy. He says, Crosshair, we never were.
Yes. Right? Oh my gosh. I
thought he was going to say, we already are your enemy. And the fact that he says we never were was a complete subversion of my expectation of that conversation, and shows the fact that they have been brothers true and true this whole time. It's just that, like you said, they just had to part ways. That was the choice. And, you know, that's it.
And they don't know how to see eye to eye.
Right.
They both think they're right in their version of the truth. And maybe they both are, about their allegiances and what matters and who they want to be and what it means to be a part of a team. But they just can't come together on that vision. But I thought that moment of Hunter saying, you know, we never were your enemies, is so full of care in a weird way.
Mm-hmm. It's very important. It's a very important line for how villains and heroes in Star Wars see each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not my enemy. You're my friend still.
Yeah.
After all we've done, right? It's like Anakin and Obi-Wan, you know, you're my brother, Anakin. I loved you. You know, he leaves him there because even though Obi-Wan hates Anakin in that moment on Mustafar, he can bring himself to kill him. He leaves him for mm-hmm. he leaves him for dead, you know, as the Force will whatever happens next to Anakin Skywalker on the sands. So it just shows that there is more complexity to good and evil in Star Wars. And it's all from a certain point of view.
But I also say, if we're gonna hop a little bit here, there's a moment right where they're under the training arena, and Omega's trying to get the droids to go, and AZ-3 pops him out and hits the other TK trooper, and he goes, "I did it."
How long he's been waiting for that moment.
I was like, King alert, icon, love this for you. So I thought that was a really great moment that was happening in the midst of all this very serious and very important Star Wars capital D drama.
Yeah. Also, I love when that trooper comes in and Omega's just like, hello. She's like, I'm kind of in the middle of something right now.
Also, oh my gosh. How did I get here? That's so weird.
So
Hi.
Weird.
Yeah.
I really did love the arena moment when they all came together and put their differences aside just to survive.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. And just the showdown with Crosshair, the up close shot of their eyes, and then Hunter zaps him. Again, he shows compassion, even though Crosshair has done some terrible things. He chooses to give him another chance. Chance after chance after chance. Speaks volumes.
Until the chances are spent. Oh, no, sad.
No, those chances will not be spent unless Crosshair dies in episode 16. Which, speaking of episode 16, Sarah.
Yeah.
Do you have any predictions for how this is going to end?
Nope. Not a single one. I have no idea. I have no idea. My only hope is that AZ3 does not die.
Oh.
I would like AZ3 to live.
You know,
everybody else can be a goner as long as AZ3 is okay. I'm kidding. I love the human characters too, but there's nothing better than a weird droid.
You know, we're talking a lot about saying goodbye to the prequel trilogy and Topoka City's gone. And who are one of the last remnants of Topoka City aside from the Bad Batch? AZ3.
No, stop.
I feel like he is the key to all of this. He's gonna stop save it. Them one last time.
No.
You know, he saved Fives, and now he'll save the Bad Batch.
Get off the pod.
Are you gonna cry if he passes? Are you gonna lose it?
Well,
you really grew an attachment to AZ3. It's quite wonderful.
I have known him for 10 minutes, and he is my son.
Oh, he's done so much.
I just relate to like a stuffy droid so much, and I know I've said that more than a couple times on this podcast, but it's true, and I really don't know what that says about me, good or bad, but sometimes I too do not have human emotions and feel like AZ3.
Yeah,
happens to the best of us.
If he does return and he becomes a permanent staple of the Bad Batch's crew, I will say that's going to be awesome, because if I get to see him every episode, that will never get old, honestly. I would love that.
That, and Gonky doesn't really have his own personality. Like, he's right. A Gonk droid. So I would love... no offense to Gonky.
No offense to Gonky. Who only says rocks. Gonk all the time. Gets a little
I want to be clear. I love Gonky. Gonky's hilarious. Like, the moments where Gonky has been there have been good ones. I mean, the things that I mentioned in my odds and ends for the last episode were all Gonky-related things. So, like, Gonky is not bad. But Gonky also can't talk and therefore doesn't have the charm factor. Right. You know what I'm saying? AZ3, he becomes like a water racer. Like, you can ride him across the ocean. Like, that's the charm factor. That's the good stuff. So I'm hoping that we get that added dynamic in, because I think it would be really interesting to see him and Tech play off each other. Especially since Tech has kind of just been relegated to being, I hate to say annoying, since like Tech is my favorite, but I just feel like he's been underutilized and he's always kind of been like wrong, if that makes sense. Like, but this, and then Echo's like, have some compassion, my dude, let's go do the right thing. And he's like, oh, you know. So I would think it would be really interesting to see Tech and AZ3 play off each other, because Tech does have more human emotion than AZ3 does. So
yeah,
where do those lines kind of start and end, I guess, yeah, is what I'm going for.
You know, I will say, as much as I love AZ3 though, nobody beats Clink. He's still my boy. Little domed droid. Oh, so cute. Well, Sarah, did you have any final thoughts on either of these two episodes before we close out? And again, we only have one left, so make it count, because things won't be the same come Friday. We're going to be highly emotional.
Let's talk about the end for just a second. I hinted earlier that we were going to talk about this moment in the end where Crosshair is, you know, unconscious. He's been stunned on the ground. And Hunter picks up his rifle and his pack and tells Wrecker to, you know, get Crosshair. Hunter and Omega are standing, you know, facing one another, and they nod to each other. And it was one of those moments where I was like, oh, that's good stuff, because it really feels like Hunter has learned from Omega just as much as Omega has learned from Hunter in this moment. The compassion to give him another chance, to take him with them and not to just leave him to die. And I think Hunter learned that from Omega. And I think it's really great to, now that we are talking about these two episodes together, which, you know, great choice, terrible choice, and great choice for us at the same time, we get to talk about the bookend moments in these two episodes. The one at the very beginning of Warmantle, where Omega's trying to learn from Hunter and flipping the knife, and one at the very end of Return to Kamino, where Hunter nods to Omega, and Omega kind of approvingly nods back.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is powerful. This is good stuff, actually.
Yeah. When you think of the compassion, too, that Hunter shows Crosshair, it's even more profound when Omega the whole season has been like, it's not Crosshair's fault, right? So for mm-hmm. Hunter to learn that, oh, actually, Crosshair did some of this on his own free will, and then to still show him that compassion speaks so loudly to how empathetic Hunter has become as a result of Omega, like you're saying. It adds that whole other layer of like, oh, he did make these choices, but I'm still going to give him a chance, even though it was kind of his fault in a lot of ways. That's mm-hmm. that's very impactful.
I will be really excited to see where it goes in this final episode, and if we get some sort of, you know, resolution there.
Yeah. Oh, I hope there's not a cliff. Are we going to be left on a cliffhanger to end the season?
Yes. Yeah. I think we are. I think we'll get some resolution, but like in this day and age, nothing actually ever ends. It's always setting up the next thing, which is okay.
Right.
Which is okay. But like, I don't think we're going to get like a solid, complete, resolution to this upcoming episode. I think it's going to say, oh, but wait, we have something greater in store. Just you wait for a whole calendar year.
It's like Moff Gideon popping out of the TIE fighter with the Darksaber, and we're just like, what?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Do you think the cliffhanger could be
Moff Gideon hopping out of the TIE fighter with the lightsaber? Yeah. I do think it is the Darksaber. Yeah. No.
Okay. But my actual prediction, do you think we could get Darth Vader?
No. Okay. Not in this season.
Okay.
No.
Maybe eventually. I don't think they're ever going to waste the opportunity to show us Vader, because they love Vader. So we're going to see him at some point, but I will be curious. I'd be curious, you know, if, I don't know, like maybe him and Tarkin are having a talk and they're going, oh, we got to bring in the big guns to get rid of these guys, get rid of this Bad Batch crew. And he's like, I'll hunt them down. And you're just like, oh God, Vader's going after him. That'd be nuts. I don't think it's going to happen, but
it could.
It could.
But it could.
Or Krennic. Maybe Krennic will show up in the next episode.
Be careful not to choke on your aspirations, Director Krennic.
I think, like you're saying, yeah, it's going to be like some sort of resolution, but then, yeah, that kicker. And I think that kicker is going to be somebody that we know, because Lucasfilm loves a cameo. And they're gonna want to show us somebody or something that we recognize to then kind of keep us speculating until season two drops, right? There has to be something.
It's gonna be baby Luke holding a lightsaber, rolling down. In a bassinet. He's gonna roll down the pool. I'm sorry, this is terrible. That's a bad joke. That's a really bad joke.
What if it's baby Yoda? Baby Yoda.
No. the way I would actually come onto this pod and be like, no, and in this essay I will
stop. Okay, but baby Yoda and Omega interacting, tell me that wouldn't be the cutest damn thing ever.
I don't want it.
You say that now, just wait. Anyways, all right, we're gonna move on before this gets too derailed, but that about wraps up this episode, Sarah. So one quick announcement for our listeners. If you're a Lucasfilm Animation fan, we have our second annual Remembering Resistance coming up on August 29th, which is at the end of the month. So that is a day dedicated to celebrating Star Wars Resistance ever since it ended last year. So make sure to use the hashtag Remembering Resistance, share any fan art, podcasts, blog posts, fan fiction, you name it. However you want to express yourself and your passion for Star Wars Resistance. If you're a fan, you can do so on that day, and we'll have more announcements in the coming weeks on that event. So as for myself and Sarah, you can find both of us on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Goodreads. I'm at Brad Whipple and she's at SH221. And if you're a fan of the podcast, make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, and wherever you listen, subscribe to the show so all of our latest episodes drop right into your podcast feed. And if you have a couple extra minutes in your day, please leave a review. It helps other people find the show and join the Star Wars discussion.
We also have a Patreon where tiers start at just a dollar, and we are so grateful for all of our patrons. Amy, Anna, Brian, Cheryl, Deborah, Donnie, Elegy, Jen, Jesse, Knights of Ren, Huang, Levi, Lindsay, Lucy, Marie Claire, Neil, Rachel, Sarah, Cyber Bouquet, Skytalkers, T, and Travis. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes, once again, thank you all for listening to this week's episode, and until next time, may the force be with you always.
Bye.